Blog Talk Radio. Well, hello and welcome to Open Book, your weekly spiritual book club. I'm Alice Shelton, and joining me as always is my friend, Lori Strawn. Hi, Lori.
Hey, Alice.
Well, we're going to do something a little different this week for Ash Wednesday. We've done someone's blog before, I believe, on a show, but I happened upon this one yesterday, and it's from a website called www.patheos.com. I assume Patheos is how you say it. And it's by a woman whose name is Kimberly Knight, and she appears to be a regular blogger or blog columnist, I suppose, is the way you say it. And we're going to go ahead and read this in its entirety. It's entitled A Queer Quandary for Ash Wednesday. And then I think once we get to the end of it, we will come back to the questions that Kimberly herself asks as the questions that we'll use for our discussion today. So it's a little long, but bear with me. It's worth hearing. So, this coming Wednesday is Ash Wednesday, and oddly enough, for this Baptist-raised, UCC-living, progressive, process, liberation, feminist, queer theological mutt, it is a highly significant day in my yearly walk with Jesus. For those of you unfamiliar with the Christian calendar, Ash Wednesday marks the beginning of Lent, a Christian season of fasting and prayer leading up to Easter. Ash Wednesday services are somber events that culminate in the ritual imposition of ashes, which is the moment when a pastor or priest applies ashes in the form of a cross to a person's forehead, speaking the words, "Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return." As some of you may know, I recently moved to Florida to create a new life with my partner, B. For about a week or so now, I've been slowly working myself into a full-blown bout of pouting, missing my beloved Kirkwood UCC and my dear friend and pastor, Susanna Davis, with and from whom I have received more than a decade of ashes. Sure, I've visited a UCC church locally, but I've not made a meaningful connection where I'd yet want to share what for me is a tender and important holy day. So, I reached out to some of my new and increasingly close friends here in Florida to find out what their plans for Ash Wednesday. I was pretty certain that they'd have churchy plans since the three of them are active Catholics, and, well, one is a priest. Without hesitation, I was immediately invited to attend their Ash Wednesday service, a full Mass. I was at once overwhelmingly grateful and considerably cautious in my response to the generous invitation. I imagine it will not come as a shock to any of you that I am actively opposed to a great deal of Catholic doctrine. What may come as a surprise to you is the fact that I also have been greatly influenced by Catholic social teaching and liberation theology. That, coupled with a general respect for other people's traditions, leaves me with layers of thoughts and emotions to sift through. Why is Ash Wednesday still so important to me? Why not receive my ashes in a community where I am genuinely and openly welcome to receive communion? Is it wrong or disrespectful to take communion in a place where I would be denied if they actually knew me? To whom is it disrespectful? The worshiping community I'm visiting, or myself? How the hell can I even consider worshiping under a roof where officially a great deal of my humanity is abhorred? This whole process of discernment over just one day of the year is inviting me to slow down and think about my LGBTQIA Christian sisters and brothers who often remain in faith communities that do not affirm their whole lived personhood, but rather actively reject the way God created them to live and love. I ask all the damn time, why on earth do you stay? The longer I sit with this quandary, the clearer I am called to articulate significant underpinnings of my own theology. First, I believe we are created to connect with one another and God through community. Second, I believe church can be community where everyone, everyone, everyone is welcome at the table. Third, and most importantly, anything that creates barriers to connection with one another and God is not of God, and certainly not sacred, but are damnable constructs of human fear, ignorance, and control. Hey, wait a minute. Extravagantly welcoming community where we are called to connect with one another and God without humanly contrived barriers is not my theology. It's Jesus. While the church often tries like the Dickens to live into the gospel, many of us know all too well she has often failed egregiously and intentionally, bless her heart. So why do people stay? Connection and community. All it takes is a few people that you feel connected to, one or two or three people whom you love and who love you in return, and it can be a compelling reason to stay in a community that espouses theology and enforces doctrine that can be soul-crushing. Catholic, Methodist, Presbyterian, Lutheran, Baptist, UCC, non-denominational, and a host of other churches have a long history of setting the table for a select few and denying access to many. Meanwhile, the many are sitting in those very same pews, quietly hiding parts of their hearts so they can remain connected with their community. Let me be absolutely clear that no one needs connection and community where our sacred worth is not affirmed. In fact, those places offer neither real connection nor authentic community, while the sin of separation from self, others, and God is the ground on which the church is built. I am called to renounce theology and doctrine that excludes anyone from God's table, and to remind y'all over and over again that there are churches where divorced, lesbian, question-asking, authority-challenging shenanigators like me are welcome in the full life of the church. Not discreetly, not subversively, but with proud proclamations that everyone, everyone, everyone is welcome at the table. Okay, so back to my quandary. Will I go to Ash Wednesday Mass with my friends? Yep. Why? Because I am a human filled to the brim with contradictions and paradoxes, broken and beautiful in God's eyes. Why? Because for now, today, I know that I need to receive my ashes, standing shoulder to shoulder with the few people in my surroundings with whom I feel a deep and growing spiritual kinship. And I will worship quietly, but with my whole self, as we are reminded of our most common human bonds, our rare and beautiful significance. And then the Hebrew, for my sake the world was created. And again the Hebrew, and our inscrutable insignificance, I am but dust and ashes. So, Lori, that's the end of the blog, and I zipped through that pretty quickly, I know. It's kind of long. But I would like to go back to her questions. And you can answer them in her voice or your own. I mean, let's just kind of open this up a little bit, and then if you have other things to add, great.
Okay.
Why is Ash Wednesday still so important to me? Kimberly asks.
Well, here is one of the places that I diverge with her just a little bit. She sort of paints Lent as, she says, somber. But that's not all that Lent is. And as our pastor of our church likes to say, Lent is really the most joyful time in the church. It's about transformation. It's about salvation. Yes, we're told, remember, you are dust, and to dust you shall return. And you can take that one of two ways, as sort of a gloomy death forecast or as a remembrance to make much of our limited time on this earth. So that I will diverge a little bit from her in saying that Lent is all gloom and doom, because I really do think it's a joyous time wherein we can work on ourselves. And hopefully, I mean, the goal is to create permanent transformation of yourself in some way. That's why Ash Wednesday is important to me. That's why Lent is important to me. How about you?
Yeah. Well, I want to touch on something you too, because I was just kind of skipping back through what she says. Because I interpreted what you said. I mean, I heard even in my own reading what you said, but she doesn't say Lent. She says Ash Wednesday services are somber events. She really is talking most specifically about Ash Wednesday and not so much about Lent. But isn't it funny that I read somberness into this too, just more, almost not a dread. I don't want to say dread, but I think we might have, I don't know, it's interesting. I might have overread what she said, so I'm glad you answered
that.
No,
I think a lot of people look at Lent with some degree of dread. I mean, it's presented as, okay, you give up something, you fast and abstain, you know, it sounds kind of onerous when you put it that way. And she does call it a season of fasting and prayer, which fasting and prayer, let's face it, does that sound joyous to you?
No. No, I hear you. I hear you. I just know I am one who, for whom Lent is not, the word joyful is not what I would routinely use. I'm trying to have an upbeat, positive Lent this year. I think we all differ, which is why I really wanted to kind of break into this a little bit. Well, her next question is interesting to me. Why not receive my ashes in a community where I am genuinely and openly welcome to receive communion? So she's talking about why would she want to go to a Catholic Mass where, because she's not a practicing member, she would not, well, that's part of why she would not be.
Yeah.
I think part of why she perceives she wouldn't be open to receive communion. So what do you think about that? What's your thought? What's her thought?
Well,
Is it more important to be with the people that you feel comfortable with, or what?
I think that's an individual choice. I certainly understand why there are people who feel that the church is not welcoming to them and that they would like to be somewhere else that is a community that is welcoming to them. Totally mm-hmm. get that. On the other hand, I would not go so far as to say, as she does, she says she's actively opposed to a great deal of Catholic doctrine. I think we throw the word doctrine around a little bit too much. I mean, it's not that the Pope has ever spoken ex cathedra on this particular subject. And in fact, if you look at the Pope as an example, he has been very welcoming to people of all sorts of, you know, LGBT questioning, all of it. And so if you look at the Pope as someone who is supposed to set the example for the church, then I think you can't look at that as the Catholic Church is anti-gay entirely. I think that we are in conversation with this. I think we're in struggle with this. I think things are not changing as quickly as they need to, and I understand people who don't want to be part of the church, but I'm hopeful. I think Catholic communities are evolving, and I'm hoping that they're evolving, and I'm hoping they're going to continue to evolve, to be more inclusive. And I hope that the Pope has a positive influence in this particular topic.
Yeah, I do too. And I think, you know, it's obviously, how do I want to say this? I think you and I are people who do believe that there should be an openness and space at the table for all people. And there should be welcoming. And I agree with you that it's not happening as quickly as we'd like. And it will never happen as perfectly as we'd like. I have very little doubt about that. And I think the fact that I would select this as the topic for our program today, and you'd agree to it, is that we both have a high level of sensitivity to the pain that is happening with our friends and family members who are in this situation with, not just with the Catholic Church, but that is certainly one of the most headline-making churches where there is not perceived as being welcoming community for gay and lesbian people. But this is a difficult topic. I don't know why I started that conversation, but it is a difficult topic because it involves individuals. It's not, you know, I agree with you in the whole thing of doctrine. I mean, in some ways, this is just such a personal matter for people that when you even bring up doctrine, when you're talking about individual people, it's just never going to fit every situation, I guess, is the way I would say it. So,
yeah, and it's more of a practice, I would say, than an actual doctrine.
I suspect there are those who would probably take exception with that. Probably.
I suppose. I think doctrine as a word is used maybe a little bit more often than it ought to be.
Yeah, I think that's true.
The matters of faith that are most important to Catholics are very few.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones that the Pope has come out and said, yes, these are the things you have to believe. Very, very few and very, very common out there. Jesus was all human and all God. I mean, things that you just they're no-brainers. There's very little that is official, you know, that's like the top four things you have to be and believe as a Catholic that people, those things are just so commonplace and so acceptable. It isn't, the controversial stuff is not primary doctrine, I don't think.
Gotcha. That explanation helps. Well, I think her next two questions are really the best questions. So I want to take a little more time maybe on these, but I'm going to kind of take them together. So the question is, first question is it wrong or disrespectful to take communion in a place where I would be denied if they actually knew me? Second, to whom is it disrespectful, the worshiping community I'm visiting or myself? So you may take those in any way you wish.
I would say more to herself. I mean, honestly, you should be in a place where you feel accepted, where you feel loved, where you feel welcomed. I don't think it's disrespectful to take communion in a place where she would be denied if they actually knew her. I feel the same way a lot of times. I sit in church and I hear things that I don't personally feel comfortable with, that I don't personally believe. And I think if they actually, if the, you know, my priest, if those people around me, if they actually knew what I believed in, they would deny me. They would not accept me. Is it disrespectful for me to continue to take communion? No, because communion is between me and my God. And God loves me and understands me, and I think has had a very strong hand in directing me to what I do believe in. So,
yeah,
I think it's more she should be in a place where she feels loved and comfortable.
Yeah, and this is one of them that I think this is where we could easily be accused as being cafeteria Catholics or mamby-pamby in the way we're stating this. And I guess I kind of go to, there is a, and I'm going to be, I hope none of our priest or nun or theologian friends really are taking me to the book on this, but there are some things that are loosely called matters of interior conscience or something like that, where an individual has in good conscience with prayer and discernment and right counsel and probably a whole list of other things, has within themselves made a decision of conscience to act in a certain way. And one of those might be, let's say, an individual who made the decision before an annulment was granted for a previous marriage, made the decision to go ahead and marry in another church or legally, and then, you know, they can't be married in the church until the annulment's there. But I think that person should, you know, is technically not supposed to take communion. Well, I'm guessing that there are a number of people who have very thoughtfully, prayerfully made the decision to continue taking communion, perhaps even after talking, and I assume in many cases after talking with the priest. You know, I think this, I really believe this falls under that umbrella of, here's a person who is a legitimate believer. I think she seems bright enough through the article that she understands if she did take communion, she understands what she's doing. You know, she gets the body and blood of Christ, the real presence, and has taken some thoughtful, prayerful time to make the decision that, in fact, she is going to receive communion if that's what she's going to do. I would not take issue with that. I mean, to me, it's she's not taking it lightly. Here's the other thing, Lori, as a Eucharistic minister, I just can't. One of the rules/guidelines that we are taught in our training is that, you know, you never create scandal during the sacrament. And so, in what circumstance would someone be denied receiving communion? I mean, I just can't. I mean, it's not like you're going to have somebody stand up in there, you know, and go, hey, pew number 7, seat 5, get out of line. And I don't mean to make light of that, but it's just, you know, but the fear people must feel and the anxiety about approaching and thinking that there is some way of people knowing. I mean, many people are sitting in the pews who haven't gone to confession in a long time, who have sins that they're heavy on their heart. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't want to confuse being gay is being sinful, because
no.
I really don't want to go there. But I'm just saying there are people who feel unworthy of communion, whether the church has made them feel that way or they're feeling that way, and they're going to communion all the time.
Right.
So I'm sorry, I've gone off on my tangent there.
No, I'm glad you brought up conscience, because the church has repeatedly affirmed the primacy of conscience. That is, if you have really struggled with an issue and you feel very strongly about it, that's the way you have to act. That's not just, well, you can, you must. You have to listen to your own conscience. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, this blog really, part of what was attractive to me about it was just the Ash Wednesday piece, as you say. But also, you know, my friend Sam Albano, who we did a show on his letter, a long time ago. He has another letter now in another place I'll have to refer you to. But this situation reminds me of that. I mean, you know, I do think people have to take these things seriously and talk about them and write about them and pray about them. And so I'm glad she did. Well, probably the last question I want to touch on, and then I know you've got a couple things that maybe we haven't touched on, but she asks the question, so why do people stay? And I think specifically here she's meaning within the Catholic Church, but again, I think there are some other examples she uses where there might be other communities that are not wholly embracing. Why do people stay? Do you agree with the reasons she gives? Are there others? Do you disagree
Absolutely.
With any of them?
I really love the answers that she presents, and particularly this line. Third and most importantly, anything that creates barriers to connection with one another and God is not of God, and certainly not sacred, but are damnable constructs of human fear, ignorance, and control. She is just dead on there. I mean, and that's what it all boils down to. If a church is based on creating barriers, well, then it's not a church, you know? It's, that's as clear as you can make it.
Yeah, I agree. The only thing I'd add to her list is just kind of goes along with my answer when people ask me why, as a woman, have I remained within the Catholic Church when it so clearly has some issues still with women in leadership and et cetera. Yeah, some issues. Let's just call them some issues. And that is because I still believe that I am more likely to have an impactful journey from within than I am from without. I believe that I will still have more voice, more space at the table inside than I would outside. And I think the same is true, which is why I'm so grateful that Sam Albano has stayed a practicing Roman Catholic and has decided, you know, that his journey is going to be about being a gay Catholic male in America. I think it's important to stay if you can. If you can, not everybody can.
Yeah. Right. Not everybody can.
Yeah. Well, what were you had a couple things you mentioned before that you wanted to touch on. Have we touched on those?
Just one. And this is just kind of silly. It's semantics. When I read this headline, A Queer Quandary for Ash Wednesday, I thought, oh, alliteration, that's so cute. And I thought, then I realized what it was saying, and then I thought, you know what, I really want to reappropriate the word queer. Don't you? I mean, it used to just mean stranger, offbeat. What is queer about being who she is? That's like saying, well, it's queer that I'm 6 feet tall. It's queer that one of my feet looks like my dad's feet, and the other one looks like my mom's foot. That's who I am. And it's, very queer in some ways and not at all in other ways. We're all unique. We're all different. And so I kind of want to take back that word and make it what it was, its former intent.
Yeah. You're so funny. I knew when I saw that title that you'd have something to say about it. I think the title was catchy for me, though. It's part of why it kind of caught on to me, because I've never been on this website before. So it was kind of a funny. Here's something else I wondered if you picked up on this. She references moving recently to Florida with her partner B, and her new life. And what's interesting is there's no mention beyond that of this person or this person being in church or being part of the faith community, which I just found interesting. And I just have curiosity about it, not judging it. It may have just been that's just not where the where it went. But Kimberly, if you hear us and you ever want to call and tell us, feel free. Enjoy talking to you on the show.
Well, you know, my cousin Sue, her partner Joan, feels strongly about remaining in the Catholic Church, whereas Sue has gone into a new faith community. So you never know.
Yeah, I could name a couple of friends who for whom, you know, one is very involved in church and the other it's just not a big deal. And you know, I'm sure that happens in straight couples as well.
Oh, of course.
It struck me.
My own husband was an agnostic
article.
For years and years and years.
Now he's
Catholic.
Unbelievable. Hey, I do have one final question, and then I'll close. And this is just, if people are listening, they will kind of laugh at me. But I do know all of the acronym for LGBTGQ. But what's IA?
Intersex and asexual.
Okay, thank you. That has not been in the Indiana headlines as we're talking about religious freedom and discrimination, et cetera, et cetera. So, okay, well, I thought I'd just ask. Well, we thank you for listening this week. As we move through Lent, it would not shock me if Lori found a couple nice things on the whole subject of Lent and journeys, but we'll just kind of see what the muse brings to us next week. We hope you'll join us, and we thank you for listening. Have a great week. And if you're looking for God, just open a book. Take care.